Hey Jordan, how's it going? How are you doing?
Rob, I'm in mourning.
Same. It was only a couple months ago we lost the Insurgents LLC board member Henry Kissinger, and now another one, Joe Lieberman, our guy, Uncle Joe, we call him around the office when he shows up.
He was always just such a great person to see when you saw his grimacing face down the hallway. Knowing he was in the office that day, it was just...
Exactly.
You knew your day was about to get brighter.
Yeah. No, prayers up to the Lieberman family. This is just a situation for me that's like, I don't even need to have a take on this. You know, Lieberman, there's so many things you can just rattle off, like supporting the Iraq war, basically was the, maybe was just the scapegoat, but was the kind of official face of like watering down Obamacare and basically preventing the possibility of having some kind of public health option in the United States. I think often we think about the 2000 election, everyone blames Ralph Nader for Bush winning, even though like Gore won the election, like he literally won the election and they just stole it. But I think that's always a funny thing too. It's like this idea that like perhaps people just weren't that excited about the Al Gore, Joe Lieberman presidential ticket. Maybe that had something to do with George Bush becoming president in 2000. So I don't know, a litany of things you can run off about Lieberman. Not a nice man. You know, we don't need to do this whole fake, like, oh, so, you know, I may not agree with him, but, you know who cares? You know, whatever.
Which is exactly what Obama did.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not just that he wasn't a scapegoat. Like, it really was him. Like, he was the deciding vote and he voted to kill it.
Yeah.
It really was just him, which is so fucking awful. Like, there are a couple things, like, even the impact that he might have dragged down Gore, and I hear you, they definitely won. God, what a better place. I mean, I'm sure a lot of things would remain the same, like a lot of problems would remain the same. But like, I always wonder what our country would look like if in 2000 we actually elected and then inaugurated a president who I think genuinely cares about climate change.
Yeah.
And that early on was talking about it, like, I wonder what it would look like. I wonder what our policies would look like now. I don't think it would be utopia, but I do think it would be at least marginally better. And again, starting that early and then without 8 years of Bush and Cheney, what would our emissions look like? What would our investments in green technologies look like from a federal perspective? I wish I knew.
Yeah, it does seem to be where things really started to go off the rails for the good old US of A. It's hard to know. It's an interesting thought experiment. Like, you know, there's the whole Iraq thing. And I guess there's a cynical part of me that thinks, I guess the big question is whether 9/11 happens in this alternate timeline or if it doesn't, because Bush is not there to do 9/11. But if it does, like if Al Gore is the president, then I imagine, regardless of like the way things turned out, probably he would have been bullied and pressured into just giving the intelligence community and the national security state basically everything that they wanted. So people think like, oh, Iraq wouldn't have happened, but I'm not really so sure about that. I think there would have been a lot of pressure if there was a Democratic president at that time to go wherever basically the demands were to start bombing, everyone that could conceivably be blamed for it. So it is an interesting thought experiment, though. But I guess going back to Lieberman, I think I would blame him probably more than someone like Ralph Nader for George Bush getting elected.
Now, on the Iraq war point, you know, I think a lot of members of Congress who were there and supported Iraq within the Democratic Party have pretended like, oh, well, I, you know, I was always a little worried, or like, oh, I can admit now that it's bad.
Yeah.
As recent as 2021, he was saying like he didn't have any regrets and it was right, and still thinks that we were right to go in, that Saddam was going to have WMDs. I mean, he lied about that into the, he lied about the WMD shit into the 2010s. Just zero remorse for his role in that, like helping spread those lies, which is just really fucking heinous. Nothing. Absolutely no remorse, no apology, no admitting, just really heinous stuff. And then he spent his last few years pushing no labels, just this centrist bullshit project, which as it stands now is just has a lot of people worried that it could just help bring Trump back, which is that's his legacy.
Well, radical leftist Joe Biden has gotten so crazy with the, some of these policies that he's put in place. So you understand.
We need a sensible option.
if only someone could take some ideas from the right and the left. And has anyone tried that ever? No, I know. It's like we're going through the same thing in Canada right now. This whole like fake civility thing, because we just recently Brian Mulroney died, who was the prime minister during the 80s and early 90s in Canada. And there's a lot of the same thing, like a lot of our liberal and social democratic politicians talking about how, you know, I may not have agreed with them, but he's a giant and is a really important person. Basically, yeah, Canada's Reagan, essentially, who oversaw the kind of like neoliberalization of our economy and all the same, you know, all the policies that go along with that, you know, privatization and destroying public sector unions and austerity, slashing housing and education and healthcare and all this stuff, really like created the conditions that are leading to all the various crises that we're now dealing with today. So just, you know, someone else that I also don't really care about, and I'm not going to pretend it's some great tragedy. So yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like playing this kind of game anymore.
How'd the premium episode go this week?
The premium episode was fantastic. I spoke with Lauren Walker of the Batting Around podcast. It's actually called Batting Around the podcast.
B-A-T-T-I-N apostrophe.
Yeah, that's right. Batten. It's fun.
Oh, cool.
But spoke with her about that big scandal right now that's unfolding with baseball superstar Shohei Ohtani. Also a scandal peripherally involving Raptors ninth man, Jonte Porter, as well, who's also getting tied up in a little gambling scandal of his own. So just talked a little bit about that, and about this kind of this the pervasiveness of sports betting and gambling apps, and how that's become kind of completely inseparable from sports culture. It was a really interesting conversation. It was great to talk to Lauren. It was a really good episode.
That Raptor scandal is so much funnier to me.
It is very funny.
I don't think Ohtani was actually betting. Like I think the real story is, and I could be wrong, his translator got in a bunch of debt as a friend. It's like, yeah, I got you, don't worry. And now because it came from his bank account, he doesn't want to jeopardize his career. It's like, sorry, got to throw you under the bus.
Yeah, you're getting
cut loose. He stole from me.
Yeah.
The Raptors player betting on unders on his own team is so fucking funny.
Yeah.
No, like, it's definitely great. Wrong, but hilarious.
Yeah. No, I was saying to Lauren, I mean, it's sad because like Jonte Porter was like one of the only positive stories in this disastrous Raptors season. He's a guy that worked really hard to come back from severe injuries early in his career, might have retired from basketball, worked really hard to get back into the rotation on an NBA team, and now has jeopardized his whole career because of some like a couple of prop bets that he seems like he contributed to, if these allegations are true, for what, a couple thousand bucks? Like, that's a good
idea. I thought I read his account was like pumping millions per month into these betting apps.
Perhaps. I don't know. I mean, maybe I need to look into it more, but either way, like whatever you're making from these prop bets, I imagine you're probably going to do better becoming a rotation player in the NBA for a few years, you know? And I think if you end up, you know, losing your career because of that, it's probably not really great, you know, financial decision, which is funny because he actually like styles himself as some kind of like a unlicensed financial advisor. He's a big like crypto guy, and he's got a whole like financial advice Discord server and stuff. All kinds of people thanking him for his like hot tips on stocks and perhaps other, perhaps some other tips about different bets that could be made. I don't know. Doesn't seem like it was a very well thought through plan from Jonte Porter, but we spoke about that on the previous premium episode with Lauren of Batting Around Podcast. So please listen to that, folks, if you can, by subscribing to the show at insurgencepod.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got Darna Noor of The Guardian on today to talk about her reporting on the ground in Baltimore with the Key Bridge collapse, the conspiracy theories that people are pushing, the racially motivated attacks on Brandon Scott, the mayor in Baltimore, and really just what the implications are for the workers, for the city, for the economy, all these things, and then the plan ahead. How long is this going to take? What are the environmental consequences of that port being closed and the adjustments that need to be made? Really good conversation with Darna Noor. Back again, they're our official depression correspondent.
Yeah, yeah. Always really love talking to Darna. This was a really good one. And before we get to her, I just thought I'd mention as well, I did another live show over the weekend here in Montreal with two former guests of The Insurgents, Nashua Lina Khan and Paris Marks. We did another live show, conversation, podcast recording here in Montreal. It was really fantastic and got to meet a couple listeners of the show who came out, which was really cool. So if you're listening and you're one of the fine folks that I got to speak to at the event on Saturday, thank you. Thank you for coming. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, and I'm sorry you're Canadian.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah,
we're just stuck here. I don't know. There's not much. Yeah, okay. Anyway, that was really cool. It was really cool to meet some listeners of the show. That was a fantastic evening. And this was a really great conversation with Darna Noor, who will be joining the program right after this. So Jordan was telling me to hold off. I just mentioned Dune 2. He was telling me to hold off because I think he's got a spicy comment about it, maybe.
Oh, no.
No. I haven't seen it.
Spicy because of the...
Yeah.
Oh, because of the drug or whatever, yeah. Whatever they're harvesting. And I know that now because I started watching Dune, the first one, last night for the first time.
Oh, nice.
And I got about a half an hour in. And then I fell asleep. Picked it back up today, another 30 minutes or so. And it's like, all right, this is just so much. I need to focus and I can't multitask. It's also kind of slow. So I'm just going to do it in like 30 minute chunks.
Yeah.
I also just watched the first one last week. And then I saw the second one, but I was super late because I was reporting on the bridge and I missed the first hour. So it sort of made sense.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's what I was gonna say. I mentioned this in the previous episode, but when I did go see Dune 2 in the theater, it was a little late, and I'm getting up there in the years, and I go to these late showings. I had a whole meal beforehand. I was pretty sleepy after about 20-25 minutes in, so the whole rest of the movie was this real struggle trying to stay awake. So I went to an even later showing on Tuesday night. I did manage to get enough caffeine in me beforehand that I was able to actually like be physically stay awake for it. And so it was definitely a more enjoyable experience. I really like it. Although it has given me, I think, a deeper appreciation for the David Lynch one. I don't know if either of you have seen that one, but it's definitely flawed. It's weird. You know, it's not perfect, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in that David Lynch version. A lot of really interesting production design and costumes and decisions that were made on that. So even though I quite enjoy these new ones, but it did give me a deeper appreciation for the original. There's a lot to like about that as well.
I have thoughts about this, but I feel like I shouldn't be talking yet because nobody knows who I am.
You're a multi-time guest. They all know. Everyone knows, darn it.
And you'll be introduced in the intro.
Yeah. Oh,
great. Perfect. I haven't seen the David Lynch one, but I thought the first one was, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was good, but kind of boring. And I liked that the second one was weirder. I just feel like I don't know why you would make a sci-fi movie that like highly produced and like slick looking. I want it to be like weird and like disgusting. Like I want it to be physically repulsive.
Well, I've got good news for you. If you want about that David Lynch version, if you want to see that, because
yeah, I assume so.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Also the Toto does the soundtrack. It's incredible too. I like the big modern Hans Zimmer synths in the new ones. And in fact, when I saw Dune 2 in IMAX this week, those big synths like physically shake your seat and your body. They're so overwhelming. But yeah. that Toto soundtrack in 84, it hits. It's really good.
I'll go back and watch it. The loudness, I think, of Dune 2 was my favorite thing about it, honestly. It's like, yeah. Yes, please make my chair shake, please.
That's what prompted me to start watching one. My YouTube algorithm lately has been a lot of like behind the scenes or people breaking down movies, shots, and sometimes scores. And I got a video about the Dune score, the original Dune score. And some jazz musician was talking about how much he liked it because it was unconventional and how Zimmer doesn't really have classical musical training. And it's like they're playing samples from it and I hadn't heard anything from it. It's like, damn, that is pretty good. And that is what brought me to the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I recommend it. Definitely.
Here's your big intro, Darna. Okay. Yeah. It was in your rider. You were fulfilling our obligation. Darna Noor of the Guardian is back with good news, as usual.
Great news.
I just sent over your customary exclusive red M&Ms. I painstakingly went through and got all the good ones. So
that's right. That's right.
That's how I expect to be treated.
People knock specific requests on riders, and I just don't. I have no I don't know that argument that it's these people are so pampered or look at these divas. It never resonates with me. Like I don't care what's on it. These people live on the fucking road.
Correct.
It's a total non sequitur, but it's like, dude, give them whatever you want. They're barely getting paid to play to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Performers are workers just like the rest of us. And if you're not getting paid enough, at least you should be able to have your fucking, I don't know, Perrier or whatever you want.
Yeah. When I was like in a band and going on tour and that kind of stuff, we didn't have any like crazy stuff in our rider, but I do remember it was really difficult. Like it's a hard lifestyle. Like it's hard to take it easy. I would have all these nights where it's like, I barely slept last night. I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm going to really take it easy. I'm just going to kind of play the show and relax. And then you show up at the venue and there's this big cooler full of like alcohol. And it's before you know it, it's like, whoop, you're right back in it again. It's tough. It's a difficult way to break out of that.
My boyfriend's band everyone should listen to Power Washer, but my boyfriend's band just went on tour for 10 days or something. And the meals that they were talking about eating was like pretty, pretty rough, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think
it's not quite as glamorous as I think some people make it out to be.
Just looked up Power Washer and the logo is an inscrutable like twig and vine looking metal logo. So right off the bat, I'm in.
I'm going
to listen to them. Did you really?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. This is great. Yeah. More love for the Baltimore music scene. On the rider point, Tom Williams from Straight from the Path, who's a friend of the show, Stray does like every several shows, they'll do like a silly rider day just to see how much of it a venue can fulfill, and they'll throw random things on there like a baseball or like everything you need to make Rice Krispie treats, like all of this stuff. And I think he's like never, I think he's gotten the baseball one time out of the times he's put it on there, but for the most part, and depending on like the size of the venue and who owns it, they'll give you like 80% of it, which is I think good.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know how we get on this topic. I can't remember. But I think it's just ridiculous that people criticize it.
Free baseball, though. That's not so bad.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. you collect those over time. Like, you've got a retirement fund building up.
I'm Darna. Actually trying to think of how we started talking about it now, and now I can't remember.
I think my brain has been destroying my TikToks. Shit for the intro.
Yeah.
Yeah, something. Of course, yes. Yeah, exactly. For my red M&M demand.
Yes. Sorry about that.
I didn't mean that I needed to. I didn't mean that I needed an intro, for the record. I didn't mean that anyone had to say anything fancy about me. I just meant, I feel just like so people are going to be like, who is this other person who's talking? Yeah. And why is she here? So
I think they knew. I think all the Insurgents listeners heard you right away. And they're like, hey, it's Darna Noor, official depression correspondent on the Insurgents podcast. We always bring on to talk about the terrible news of the day. That's so we all feel sad after.
We need to give it a second before I make this somber transition, because we can't go in laughing.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Darna, you're here because on Tuesday, a container ship crashed into the Key Bridge in Baltimore. And many people, if not everyone, has seen the clip by now of the bridge just completely collapsing into the harbor. The first time I saw it, I didn't think it was real. I was hoping it was a hoax. It just didn't seem like something that could happen. And unfortunately, it did. And we'll get into people not being able to accept that or implying motives later. But as somebody who is from Baltimore, you've covered, you know the city well, you know the role that harbor plays in the industry in that city, how vital it is beyond just for the local economy, but for like the national and international economy. It's a really big and important harbor. You have talked to residents there. You've been covering the story for The Guardian. I guess beyond just this happened and we now know the ship had like a technical issue and it veered off course. What is happening now? Governor Westmore is out there talking about how they're going to rebuild. The federal government has pledged to cover the entire cost. But what when you're talking to people who work there or families, colleagues who lost friends and coworkers, I mean, what are they saying? What is happening on the ground there?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone here is honestly just still kind of in shock. I, as you both have been saying, I tend to like cover pretty sad things. I write about the climate crisis. I often write about like, awful cases of pollution or like labor injustices and things like this. So I'm used to being like pretty emotionally devastated by the stuff that I'm covering, but this felt kind of different because as I was interviewing people, I was also getting calls from people all over the country being like, holy shit, are your loved ones okay? And I just had to be like, I think so, but I'm like not 100% sure, you know, we don't even know. So that was pretty wild. As you've sort of alluded to, obviously the people who are the worst affected by all of this were there were six workers who were on the ship or that on the bridge rather, repairing potholes and seemed to not have survived. Two were rescued, pretty incredibly during the early stages of like the emergency rescue mission. But two bodies were recording this. As we're recording this, two bodies have been recovered. There are four other workers who are still missing. All of them were, you know, immigrant contractors who were like working the overnight shifts to repair potholes on the bridge, which is just completely devastating. I talked to like a coworker of theirs and a friend of theirs who was basically like, you know, this was a job that all of these guys were working to support their families back home. Like not only their families, you know, their spouses and their kids here, but also like they were sending money back to Mexico, to Honduras, to the various countries that they'd come from. I think it really is like pretty unsurprising that it's those immigrant workers that are bearing the brunt of this awful disaster. There are going to be lots of other people who are affected too, obviously, because of the port shutting down and, traffic being completely screwed up and the many sort of like cascading effects of all of that. So we can get all into all of those too. But the families, I think, of those victims are really the worst affected.
I guess the question I had, this wasn't really clear at the time, so I didn't want to speculate it too much when I talked about this with Lauren a few days ago on the podcast. But you know, we can get into all the like the sort of weird right wing guys and the kind of grifting on their sort of pet social causes about this. But I think the thing that I was wondering was, you know, there was a lot of people pointing out the way that infrastructure has been so neglected in America and Canada and the West in general over the last several generations, and that like America does have this kind of really like almost like crisis level situation of like crumbling roads and bridges and in shoddy infrastructure. Was this a case of that, like from what you know, Darna, or was this really just a freak accident? Like I pointed out, I don't know if there's a lot of bridges where if you crash a gigantic boat into one of the main support structures, it's good things are going to happen. So was this just a freak accident, or is there an argument here to be made about America's infrastructure problems or neglect or any of these kind of consequences of the last 30, 40 years of economic policy?
Yeah. I mean, these were some of the first questions that I had too. And I think it sort of depends who you ask. You know, I've talked to like some engineering experts who have certainly said that this was not a case of this particular bridge being in disrepair, which I guess is heartening. Although I don't know, other like experts might have different opinions. However, this was a bridge that was built back in like the 70s. And this cargo ship that hit the bridge was, I mean, as you said, Jordan, was like fucking just massive, like completely massive on a scale that did not exist in the 70s at all. And so I don't know. I do feel like there are some kind of bigger questions to ask about why a ship of that kind is supposed to be that close to a bridge in the middle of the night. Anyway, especially when there are people on it. And so, I mean, in that sense, like, yeah, I think there's a bigger sort of social infrastructure question to be asking, like whose interests are being served, I guess, by, the way that shipping is maintained. I mean, and like, I don't know, does that mean that there was anything in this particular case that could have been done for the bridge, that would have prevented it from falling? There have been some people who have said, like, if it had had XYZ support, maybe this wouldn't have happened. But obviously, you don't expect something like this to occur. This was also, I think, in many ways, kind of a freak accident. So I don't know. I mean, it's sort of a sticky question. But like, the bigger question of like, if we can sustainably have ships of this size run by like often skeleton crews near infrastructure that has people on it is I think something else entirely.
Yeah, I saw that same reaction that you did, Rob. I saw it, of course, on the right. It was all wokeness, DEI, whatever, and then you had just like the broader conspiracy fringe, which is just devolved into they did this intentionally.
Yeah. Cyber attack.
That's all nonsense. The stuff that I was like, I mean, I kind of see what you're getting at, but I don't think it applies here. It's like the stuff that you're talking about. I saw people being like, we're sending all of this money to Israel and we can't even like repair our bridges. And it's like, I don't know if any bridge would survive getting hit by a ship that big in a support column. Like, it's just,
yeah. Like, I understand the basic point of that, but I'm not sure if this is an example that really like is pertinent.
Yeah. I don't think we should be sending Israel all that money. I also think this is separate from that. It's
for
ridiculous.
Sure. And like, I don't know, as it's still obviously really early. So like, as more investigation and stuff happens, maybe some of that will surface. Like, maybe there actually was some like particularly awful, you know, maybe it was like a sort of lack of infrastructure upkeep or something like that. But like, yeah, you're right. We shouldn't be sending Israel all that money because we shouldn't be sending Israel all that money. And also, that might not have been the case here. So,
yeah. I did see that story in the Lever about the giant conglomerate that owns this boat was like silencing whistleblowers and blocking employees from reporting safety concerns to the Coast Guard. So that does seem like a pretty pertinent something that you could point to about like corporate overreach or corporate greed that has kind of contributed to this kind of a situation.
Yeah, totally. Shout out to the Lever always. I think they found that it was only 8 months ago that like the Labor Department sanctioned Maersk. This was a, it was a Maersk Line limited charter ship. And it was just 8 months ago that the Labor Department like sanctioned them for, yeah, retaliating against a whistleblower. So yes, that I think certainly seems like a, there's a story of corporate negligence here. And it might have been on the shipping side, not on the bridge side. But I don't know. I mean, there are other, like, again, the social infrastructure questions, I think, are definitely, like, worth asking. I mentioned that, like, during the early stages of the rescue operations, two workers were rescued from the waters, which is pretty amazing. And one of them was rushed off to the hospital, but the other person refused medical care. And maybe that's because he was somehow miraculously totally fine. We don't know. But also, you know, these were contractors working the overnight shift. It's not unheard of for a contractor working the overnight shift to not have health insurance or, you know, potentially, I'm not like saying that this is definitely the case. I don't know. But, you know, there are workers in those situations who sometimes lack immigration status. And so it raises questions, I think, about like how a person is in a position where they've undergone like, you know, it's like a generational tragedy that's happened to them. And they could potentially be in a position where they fear retaliation for seeking medical help for that. So, you know, in that sense, like, yeah, that if it's the case, is definitely a case of corporate negligence or abuse, really.
Yeah, there's something a little bit sick about the ways that these like right-wing guys, as soon as anything happens, basically, but like the moment they see this image of this bridge collapsing, it's the, all their pet causes get talked about as wokeness and DEI. DEI did this, you know, which is, I just think, an amazing stance to take about a lot of things, but this in particular. But then, yeah, they're blaming, you know, this kind of bullshit corporate diversity, ethics, and inclusion programs. And meanwhile, it's like underpaid and overworked immigrant workers that are the ones that are actually the victims of this. You know, there's something kind of very sick about that. But I think just in general, just this pivot, I mean, again, I mentioned this the other day, but worth reiterating how fucking insane it is that this is the response from people online, that they see this like horrible tragedy unfolding and this really scary footage. And their very first thought is like, how can I blame this on diversity? How can I blame this on wokeness or critical race theory or immigration? Like, that's what I mean. I saw on Fox News, this is about Joe Biden's open borders policy. Like,
yeah,
that's what causes this.
As always.
While again, it's like immigrants are the ones that are victims of it. It's like, it's so sick.
Some Republican elected official even was like, oh, this is because of the Green New Deal. So it's just like no matter what your like pet little, you know, like bigoted causes, there's always, Jordan's like, that's true. That's true. It totally was because of the Green New Deal. But yeah, I mean, the like DEI mayor thing was particularly absurd.
That is amazing. Yeah.
What is a DEI mayor? Like, do you think that he was like a diversity player, not that he was elected? What do you like?
This is my understanding of what this term means. And this is totally promoted by Elon Musk, like one of the most wealthy people in the world and the owner of Twitter. DEI is when a black person just has a job, basically, in the public sector, the private sector, whether they're a mayor, whether they're an airline pilot or engineer. That's the reason. Like, if there's a black person that has a job somewhere, it's because that was just stolen away from a harder working and more deserving white person. And every single time every single problem that happens in society now, this is the reason. Like, all the stuff with Boeing and the aircraft failing, and that's the reason. Because there's black pilots and black engineers and black people in the like corporate structure or other people of color. And I just think it's honestly kind of shocking and incredible to me that Elon Musk, this is like, it's so brazen now. These people that are like, I think there used to be maybe a little bit more effort to kind of obfuscate or like not be so blatantly, obviously racist. But it feels like whatever little barricades there maybe once were in terms of like social issues or embarrassment that people might have felt, it seems to be, it's so just like encouraged now, especially on that website by the owner of the website, that it's like, it's crazy how comfortable people have gotten just being like blatantly racist in these moments.
Totally. Also, like, I mean, as you said, very cruel considering who the workers were, who were, my Max Alvarez at the Real News Network, I think said this really well, which is like, you know, these are workers who were spending their entire night fixing potholes so that we can all have a smooth drive to work in the morning. And they were the ones who bear the brunt of this. And also, like, Baltimore is a majority Black city. There are many, many people of color here. Who do you think is going to be repairing the bridge? Who do you think is going to be making sure that the economy gets back to, you know, back to functioning here? Like, who are the people who you think are actually going to be doing all of that work?
Or becoming elected officials.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's not totally that hard to understand.
Yeah. The Brandon Scott diversity hire thing, which, I mean, everyone had their own word that they were using, as he pointed out on Joanne Reed, to replace the N-word. He went to an elite liberal arts college in Maryland, has been working in public service since the 2000s after he graduated college in 2006. In 2011, began his time on city council. Eventually, they voted unanimously to make him president of the city council. Had various positions before being elected mayor. The idea that he is just plucked in there because he's Black, and you're talking about the racial demographics of Baltimore, it's like 60% Black, 27% white. Like, it's a majority Black city. It's a majority diverse city. They're voting to elect people that represent them. And I don't know if it's an unfamiliarity with Baltimore. It could be. I don't know if people only got their impression of Baltimore from like season or and especially about the docks from season two of The Wire. But the idea that he doesn't belong there isn't just, it's like, it's racist. And then also it's extremely stupid, because not only does he belong there because of his career, just like, you're only mad because he's Black. If it was just some white guy, they wouldn't care. And I thought the way he handled it on Joanne Reed today was good. And of course, it's upsetting all of the same accounts that are pushing that same narrative. It's just it's a really sad state of affairs that we have gone from just, you know, basic racism to like a lazy attempt to code switch it. Also conflating that with education policies through critical race theory, and now we've just moved on to workplace acceptance and inclusion. And that's just a blanket catch-all term for any time, to your point, Rob, anytime there's a Black person having a job, and in this case, in a public position. Yeah. It's really pathetic.
An elected position, yeah, it's pretty, it's like, it is cruel and awful and also just like so dumb and nonsensical. Like, I don't even know what these people think that they mean in some cases.
Well, it's frustrating too, because this is just, it's been decades of the exact same conversation. Like, the same people were complaining about affirmative action and then welfare queens and CRT and wokeness and DEI. And it's all just basically different words for the same concept, you know, right? Of people of color getting access to maybe different rights or opportunities that were denied to them for generations because of their identities. And I think the DEI thing is interesting as well, because this is like a bullshit corporate thing that got put in place after 2020. So these corporations could kind of like cover their asses and kind of have this phony commitment to diversity, so people wouldn't get mad at them for perpetuating structural racism. And then it's like, it's people of color that end up getting the like the negative attention and people freaking out and getting angry about it. Just for existing in public or in these institutions. Like, this DEI thing was not to like take things away from white people and give them to people of color. It's a purely like bullshit corporate face saving move. But
yeah, basically a way to not do anything. I'm glad that you said that, because I was going to say, like, I have my critiques of like DEI in the corporate workplace. But like, the election of a Black mayor in a majority Black city who, look, I've had, I and many other reasonable people have had plenty of, you know, critiques of like particular things that Brandon Scott has done in his time in city council and his time as mayor. But like the suggestion that he is a diversity hire into that position, and the suggestion that, like, I don't know, in some way, like, his race or the race of immigrants who are coming into this country or something were responsible for this, like, horrible freak accident is pretty infuriating.
And again, to reiterate, even the people there was some coverage about the race and nationality of people who were working on the boat. It wasn't even like they were incompetent or they were diversity hires. It's just there was a technical issue, right? Yes. Like this, like the boat malfunctioned.
They lost power. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That's absolutely. Oh my God. But none of this really means anything to anyone like that. Like, they're going to push it because it's an opportunity. Any news story becomes the next conduit for this narrative. I mean, people were forecasting it as soon as the video started to get shared around. I saw a handful of friends of ours, people who have been on the show, just everyone knew where it was going to head before it even got there. It's like, they are going to blame this on diversity. They are going to blame this on people of color. And that's just, it's so predictable because that's all they fucking talk about now.
Which also, I mean, I have like some amount of sympathy for people who watch the video and were like, is this even real? Because I mean, I woke up at 4 a.m, saw that video and was like, this is absolutely nuts. Is this video real? Like, obviously, you know, that's the first thing you think when you see it. But to take that moment of shock and to transform it into something like that craven is, you know, pretty, I think it takes a special kind of person to do that so quickly.
I'm with you. I didn't think it was real because it's such a huge bridge and like most of it, everything in the frame collapsed. Like, I think we all should be like a little skeptical whenever we see anything sensational because of AI, unfortunately. But yeah, I was just like, I need to know if this is real because, you know, breaking 911 on Twitter, sharing a video, like who knows where it comes from, isn't enough for me. So, but like that, it's just, it's so surreal because that bridge is just so big. Like, I've been over that bridge. It's colossal. It's just, it's so unnerving.
It was, like the third largest bridge of its kind in the world, the second largest bridge of its kind in the United States or something. It's it's a really massive bridge, massive ship. I mean, just like a real, like there's no good way to get out of that situation.
Yeah. And I mentioned as well, the people that went into the different kind of like, this is terrorism. It's a terrorist attack. It's a cyber attack or this kind of thing. The sort of, I saw Andrew Tate, and saying something like this, and then like Alex Jones and all these kinds of weird people. This looks intentional to me. This looks deliberate. All these experts like log on, and just overall, I feel like it says nothing good about the ways that like when the moment that these kinds of things happen, instantly everyone's first instinct is to just like go in these crazy directions about in this weird, whatever weird conspiracy mentality that they have, whether it's terrorism, whether it's DEI, and even people are kind of guilty of this, of like kind of just like instantly trying to like make some kind of broader point or have some different take about infrastructure or whatever thing, even though I think that's probably the most tethered to reality, the people that we're talking about that kind of thing. But it really says nothing good, especially like when it gets to like the people more to the right. This instinct to now like every single incident like that happens to try and graft some kind of like political meaning onto it or use it to advance some kind of like ideology or theory that you might have, rather than like expressing basic sympathy or shock or just taking a moment to process it. I feel like it's probably a sort of general sign of how unhealthy most people are mentally right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've actually been saying that, like, you know, because I have been reporting in the place that I live for the first time in a while, I had no, like, it wasn't even that I wasn't interested in developing like a take or an analysis immediately. I was just like, I don't have time to do that because I have to go and talk to people who are like affected by this. And I felt like, I don't know, something very good happened to my brain when I was like, oh, there is like a material world out there and you should just like learn the facts from the people who are affected by the thing before you like figure out what you want to say about it on the internet. But I mean, obviously, like for many, many reasons, that's the way that we're incentivized to like engage with tragedy. And that's really bad, I think, for all of us.
We've moved on now. Cat Turd 2 sharing a tweet from some other right-wing guy. And there it is. The Dolly ship's black box has 2 minutes of missing data right before it crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
There it is.
How convenient. There it is. Community note. On a loss of ship's power, yeah, the Voyage data recorder will not record ship instrument data. No, there it is. They don't have the black box.
I keep telling myself I've got to stop getting my opinions about geopolitics and conspiracy and ship and bridge engineering from Cat Turd 2 and
maritime
just keep
expert.
Getting pulled back in. Yeah.
Maritime expert Cat Turd 2.
He's just got so much charisma, too, you know? So much raw charisma. Yeah, I just can't
help
but pay
attention.
Usually
trustworthy, but in this case, it just seems he really missed the mark, you know?
Sarna, where do they go from here? Is there any estimate of how long it will take to rebuild the bridge? And could you talk about, from what you understand, the impact on flow of goods in and out of the harbor? I mean, are people just unable to work now?
Yeah. So in terms of how long it'll take to rebuild the bridge, the answer is a while. We don't know how long. It took 5 years to build the bridge in the 70s. And it could take even longer this time because they're going to have to assess the damage. They're probably going to put in, thankfully, better safety protocols this time around. So I've talked to some people who basically said like 7 to 10. Which I'm glad, obviously, that it's not just going to be like a kind of shoddy, quick job, but it's going to be pretty wild for people who rely on that bridge pretty heavily. The port is mostly closed completely right now, which is, I mean, just truly awful for, you know, the effects on the economy outside of Baltimore will be pretty big, it seems. Baltimore was like one of the biggest ports for shipping out cars and like some farm machinery. And that stuff is all going to be pretty disrupted. A bunch of coal exports are going to be pretty screwed up from this for a while. And there's also a lot of concerns about what's going to happen in the meantime. Like some of those shipments are already getting diverted, but I've talked to some folks who are really concerned that in the absence of the port, there's going to be a lot more massive diesel trucks on the roads that are not designed for them. And oftentimes those are roads like in a community called Curtis Bay, which is pretty close to the bridge and is, majority people of color, already super polluted by a lot of like a landfill and an incinerator and a bunch of other polluting projects. There's a lot of concern that there's going to be a lot more of these massive trucks on the road, and that's going to be a danger for kids who are playing outside, and it's going to put more cancerous pollutants into the air. So there's like potentially a lot of fallout from that too. And then obviously there are thousands of people who rely on that port for a job directly, like 15,000, I think even more than that. And then there's many more thousands of people who rely on, you know, the port workers' business at their restaurants or, like contractors, subcontractors who provide materials to the port and things like that. So it's going to be a real serious, kind of catastrophic event for a lot of labor here in Baltimore, which is pretty awful to think about.
City that really can't afford a big setback like that either.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want to talk about like the effects of awful social infrastructure, like that is, I think, a huge issue that we're going to be facing. Honestly, I was pleasantly surprised to see the Biden administration step in immediately and say that they weren't going to wait for the private sector. They actually used those like words, which I thought was pretty, pretty great. And they were like, we're going to fund this with all federal money. We're not going to wait for the companies to come through, which is, obviously not altruism. Like, they don't want shipping to be screwed up any more than any of us do, are relying on the flows of capital to do what they're supposed to be doing. So it's not like it's some like great kind favor or something, but still, it's a lot better than it could have been if they were like, we're not accepting responsibility for this. So that's good.
I think what we need is Donald Trump to show up and throw around some paper towel bags to people. I think that would really...
Mm-hmm.
That would really improve the situation if he were to show up.
Even to boost morale, Come bring me some, Mr. Trump.
Yeah. I need paper towels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Darna, we want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for your reporting. We'll look to you as the story develops. Where can people follow you and find more of your work?
Thanks so much for having me. You can find my work on The Guardian, which is theguardian.com, which seems obvious. And then I'm also on Twitter, also very obviously, at Darna Noor, which is my name. So boring. And at Cat Turd 2. That's me.
Yeah, that's your alt.
That's your alt account. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, I've been outed now. I just outed myself. Whoops.
Docs.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Darna.
Thank you so much for having me.